Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammaha sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammaha sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammaha sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. Okay, so this is the Queen's House of Retreat in Saskatoon. Today is the 9th of April. And this is the kind of concluding little Dhamma talk. And in only about half an hour, everyone will be kind of free to head their ways, you know. Till next, we might meet in the future, which I'm kind of looking forward to. Now, today we. I'm hoping everyone made a sincere effort to develop mindfulness. Okay, that's a very central theme in Buddhism is mindfulness. And as you go your own ways and you go back to, your families and your maybe your kids and your jobs and whatever it is, your beloved pets and such and relatives. Well, you won't be formally meditating anymore, but every little bit that you can bring mindfulness to that is going to make an impact for the better, I say. And now, the Pali word. The word from the scriptures, the Buddhist scriptures for mindfulness, is sati. Sati. And it means, basically like attention, the ability to stay in the present and pay attention. And I'm sure we've all heard this mindfulness word a lot. It's kind of a buzzword, A lot of other modalities have picked it up too, not just Buddhism. But this word sati is, kind of a very ancient word where it kind of originated. Now, sati is almost always accompanied by a second word, sampajanya. Okay, sati, sampajanya. They're kind of buddies, these two words. And sampajanya means something to the effect of like, having a sense of context to the place and time that you're in. Having like a circumspect appropriateness that you're with it in the situation you're in. You're not just present and paying attention, but you're like with it as well. There, you know,
At one with the moment.
well, yes, you're part of the context of the situation. So you're aware of the other people too. Things like what does their body language tell you? What does their facial expressions tell you? What is the tone of the situation you're in? What's appropriate? That's sampajanya. Yeah. Okay, so earlier today I mentioned how my friend Marty, his sons have got all these wonderful new Legos. And, some of them were so darn interesting looking, I was awfully tempted to pick one up and look at it. But I didn't. That's sampajanya. Because the context of the situation is, I'm a Buddhist monk. I'm not at Marty's house to play, I'm trying to give my sincere kind of, offering to this retreat, not to a walk down memory lane with the Legos. You know what I mean? So if I had fantastic awareness, fantastic mindfulness, and then mindfully picked up the Lego piece. And mindfully regarded it with perfect attention, rapt attention. Yeah, that's sati. But it's not sampajanya, because the context is no. a Buddhist monk would do well to not, you know, take an interest in these kids' toys, right? Okay, so my lesson that I wish to share then, as you all head back, is as you nurtured your ability to stay in the present, and that all by itself is a skill, okay? That all by itself is something to work at and nourish and develop, you know? Just like a bodybuilder goes to the gym and pumps some weights to develop that muscle, okay? That's just one of the muscles in Buddhism, though, your sati. Okay? Now when you go home, you're going to get a chance to take this kind of to the next level of, like, what are you going to do in the way of sampajanya when you get home? Okay? And I have to admit that one of the most wonderful and charmed things about being a Buddhist monk I love is developing this sampajanya. I love it. Where the more that I continually take a fresh look at the situation I'm in and respond to the situation appropriately, so much more, you might say, wonderful resultants come my way. You know? Like back when I was a layperson, I don't know about you, but I had gotten into so many rather rigid habits in my life that I was missing out on a lot of this sampajanya in my life. I was, not very attentive to the context I was in. Now, if something interested me, I could focus it very intently on it. Okay, my sati was good if something was interesting. But my sampajanya might be rather poor around other people, you know? Being sensitive to maybe how they're feeling, or sensitive to what they might like to do or talk about or whatever, you know? My sensitivity to other people was not the greatest, okay? And, so much more opens up in the world when we have the sampajanya to tune into it. You know, like, new and interesting possibilities open up just because we made we paused, we took the time to kind of like take stock. You know, what exactly is happening right now? What's the right thing to do right now? You know, I could just do the habitual thing right now that I normally do, but if I just pause, what would the best thing be to do right now? And then something might like pop in my head. Oh, there's that woman, Kathy Watson. I forgot to get back to her. Oh, right. I better go check that, you know? Oh, and then I go check. Oh, and there's an email from her. Oh, this is an important email. You know what I mean? It's when we pause and just take stock and ask ourselves, what is the most appropriate thing? It can occur to us what the, you know, some unexpected, maybe not unexpected, but just we would have missed it if we did not pause, you know? If we did not allow some sampajanya there, we might have missed something important. Interestingly, science has a way of describing this. I read this really good book that I recommend called The Master and His Emissary by Ian McGilchrist. Highly recommended. He's not Buddhist, or at least I wouldn't call him Theravada Buddhist. He's actually a little Buddhist, but he's like this hardcore brain scientist. And he talks about how he describes what it's like to be predominantly right-hemisphered in our thinking or left-hemisphered in our thinking. like from the point of view of neuroscience, they've done a lot of research on this. And if and when we can shift our awareness more into a right hemisphere way, by the way, all this meditating and stuff we're doing, by and large, we'll do that. We'll shift us over to the right hemisphere. And when we do that, one of the neat things your right hemisphere is good at is you have these kind of like eureka moments, okay? Like where you're like, oh, right. I was, I forgot to put on some sunscreen before I head out for a bike ride. I might get a sunburn, you know? Like you would have forgot the sunscreen if you didn't stop to think, you know? You have a eureka moment. Oh, right, I need that. Or, you know, or, oh, I forgot to close that door. The cats will come in down in the basement, you know, or whatever it is, right? Those eureka moments remind you of all the little things you were hoping to not forget, okay? That is very sampajanya, okay? When you clue into the appropriateness of what's happening. Yeah. So as we develop our mindfulness, we kind of keep checking in. What's the right thing to do? What's appropriate? And like we have more, you might say, readiness for the surprises of life. And our lives can be much more rich this way, you know? Like, for example, this morning, there was a little bit of a period preparing to come here today where I was starting to feel a bit anxious, you know, like, oh, what if I forget something? You know, I got to make sure I bring everything I need. And, you know, what do I need to bring? And Marty's got these three cats. And, like, they absolutely love to be petted in the morning, okay? They all come to get petted. And like, you know, and I was about to be like, get away, cats. I got to think, you know, but I'm like, no. The sampajanya of the moment is pet the cats, you know? So I stopped and I pet all those cats and like, you know, just that was the right thing to do. And that, from an emotional point of view, that actually, assuaged that anxiety I was feeling to pet the cats. So that was actually the right thing to do, you see. That's why an example like this is so golden. Like, you know, here I was like, okay, you know, I got to look at my list and I must not forget anything. And like, I got to be organized and I got to be like, you know, very like focused. And, you know, I was feeling tense and, you know, anxious. But no, the antidote is actually not the list. The antidote is petting the cats. The antidote is doing something like perpendicular to organizing. Something, you know what I mean? What the moment called for was, no, these cats, you know, that was the right time to pet them. Yeah. So that's what I'm talking about is be open to those unexpected opportunities or unexpected possibilities, you know? And the more we pause a little bit here and there in our day and check in, what's the right thing to do? We allow those eureka moments to happen. And it is by shifting into a more right hemisphered mode of the mind, that's when that kind of like eureka function kind of comes to life. Yeah. Or just like you were saying about when you go to nature and you feel like kind of at one and you feel, you know, you see the, that's a very right brain kind of thing. When you kind of merge into your environment, you feel part of it. You witness it. It's so big and you know, you're kind of just a small piece of the big, wonderful, you know, that's very right brain. Yeah, that's good. That's very good. Yeah, whenever you feel a sense of expansiveness and a sense of space and a sense of like, you know, even like boundarylessness and you're, you know, you just sort of dissolve and become at one with nature or with your environment, that's very right hemisphere. That's very good. And that's the opposite of being very, like, you know, focused and logical. And that's very left hemisphere. When you're like a microscope lasering in on some task, you know, some problem or whatever. The left hemisphere is great at problem solving. And we sometimes do need to solve problems in our lives. So, you know, it has an appropriate time and place to use this left hemisphere analytical ability. And many of us have jobs where we use it a lot. So, you know, we make a livelihood off it too. And I say, well and good. You know, everyone should have a good livelihood, right? However, be warned. The left hemisphere is sticky. It's easy to overuse it. The right hemisphere is sadly not sticky. I wish it were. And as we develop more and more meditation, that's us building up the ability to go to the right hemisphere and stay there for longer and longer periods. By the way, that's where all the happy juices are, is over in the right hemisphere. That's where we feel a sense of, like, empathy with other people and connectedness and ease and, yeah. And we have a deeper understanding of deeper appreciation of art, music, metaphors, poetry. All that stuff's over in the right hemisphere, you know? Yeah, it's kind of the artsy side of your brain, more so. The more abstract kind of art. Yeah, so why I wish to dwell on this Sati Sampajanya thing is there are a lot of other you know, health practitioners or teachers or counselors or this and that, who do teach some kind of a mindfulness thing. And I praise that. And people can make enormous strides in their lives towards better health, better happiness, better life, you know, through mindfulness. It is a big deal. However, in order for me to kind of accurately represent the Buddha's teachings, his perspective, Sampajanya plays a key role here too. You know, now when we're on the meditation cushion, it is more so, or doing walking meditation, it's more so of a sati thing. You know, we're kind of trying to build up just the present moment awareness, you know. But then once we come off the cushion and it's time to kind of, you know, interact with other people or do our jobs or, you know, kind of go about the rest of our day. That's where Sampajanya can bring further leaps and bounds of benefit. Yeah, and it's all about making choices. Sampajanya is very much about, you know, now that you're faced with a number of choices, if those choices are informed by this sense of Sampajanya, that makes the choices way more effective. Like, they have appropriateness to the place and time. And there's like an emotional awareness rolled in there too, eh? Into that choice making. It's not just a sheerly logical and rational decision-making process. There's, you know, how does it feel to make these choices? Sampajanya partakes of that, of the emotions. And as one walks farther down the path of this practice, in this, you know, Buddhist kind of system of practice, I guarantee your sensitivity will sharpen up even more around tuning into your emotions and how you feel and bodily awareness, such that, you know, you can feel inside whether something is right or wrong. much, much faster than before. Whenever we get out of touch with that awareness too much, and we lose that sensitivity to our, you know, our emotions inside, like our feelings inside our body, when we lose touch with that, we might use rationality too much in our decision making. We might get kind of too left-brained about everything in our life, trying to reduce everything to a bunch of variables and statistics and, you know, kind of like taking like kind of a cold, hard look at it, you know, when the human experience very much includes the emotional dimension of it for the best choices to be made. So as we tune into our bodies more, choices which used to be hard for us to make, you know, choices which we used to have to think long and hard about, weighing many variables. When we have emotional sensitivity, our heart can tell us in a finger snap whether something is right or wrong. You know, it's like this new person I met, should I go with them to this place they've invited me? Let me ask my heart. And your heart's like, nope. This doesn't feel good. Okay, don't go with that person then. You know what I mean? It's possible to ask our hearts about these things, eh? And if we have that sensitivity, our heart can be like, wham, like, yes, this feels right, do it. You know what I mean? Yes. So, you know, like your heart can like light up with joy when something is right for you. Or it can be like a dark peek into a not good place. And your heart's like, this is a warning shot across your bow. Don't proceed. Or your heart is gonna be damaged by this for a while, you know, if you go on ahead with this. Yeah, your heart can give you like a warning shot across the bow. Like you've heard of this, right? Like where, you know, two naval ships are almost about to get into a conflict in a war, you know, two different countries or whatever. And one ship wants to maybe not shoot the other ship, but just send them a warning. So they fire a shot across their bow. It narrowly misses the other ship to say like, I could shoot you, you know. That was a warning. Yeah, so your heart can do that, and you might feel it's kind of like a pang. It's like a tug. You know, it's like an uneasy. It's like this pressure almost. That's like, it's not good, you know? Yeah. And that's a big part of actually developing morality is, do we listen to those warning shots when they come? When we are about to do something that's a mistake, do we listen? And if we can heed the warning and pull back from the decision, and by the way, it is virtually always real tempting to do the thing that's bad, you know? Like, you know, if one is on the verge of making some bad choice, you usually want to do it. It's something fun usually. It's something, you know, kind of sinfully fun. You're like, I'll get away with it, you know, why not, you know? But nonetheless, if we are to develop our morality, we do have to get better at heeding those warning shots. And we need the sensitivity to sense the warning shots. Okay, and that partakes of this mindfulness thing and meditating and becoming sensitive to our body. Yeah. Yeah, so that's how can I put it? There are a number of, shall we say, teachers of meditation out there, and, you know, not necessarily Buddhist teachers of meditation, but just some kind of secular meditation. And if they teach mindfulness, I say, well and good. But sooner or later, I say, there is kind of no escape from also caring about morality if we want to maintain our hearts in a way where it stays whole and undamaged. We must protect our hearts from the damage of poor choices, because we harm our own hearts when we make those poor choices. Yeah, we don't get away with those things that we figure we would. Like that's a part of us about, you know, emotional maturity, is when we slowly but surely, you know, through the school of hard knocks, we learn to heed the warnings and pull back. And it's an act of will, because you want that thing, you know, like, oh, that Lego is so tempting to pick up. No, I won't do it. You know, you have to. It's always an act of will to not indulge in the thing you want. It's always the easier choice to do the bad thing every time. And then, I'll teach you a couple more Pali terms and then conclude, which is, so morality, as I use the word morality, the Pali word is sila. That appears all over the place in the suttas. And if you were wanting to go to heaven after you die, and you were to perfect just one thing, let it be sila. Let it be your morality. That is heavily influential on whether you go to heaven or not, is what's your morality like. There are other good qualities to also develop, don't get me wrong. But
is there a specific code for morality?
Because, well,
not
yes.
Everybody's moral choices are the same.
You're right. There is some gray area, I will agree. However, for when you are a lay person in Theravada Buddhism, the absolutes to not violate would be don't kill, don't steal, don't lie, no sexual misconduct, and no intoxicants leading to heedlessness. Intoxicants leading to heedlessness. Yeah.
Pretty basic.
Yeah. However, hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I said basic, I didn't say easy.
Yeah. Yeah. That, like, a lot of people actually, you know, there'll be one or more thing on that list that's real hard for them. In order to develop our morality, the last two words I want to teach here are hiri and otapa. Hiri and otapa. So, one is like a sense of conscience, you know, kind of like how Pinocchio has Jiminy Cricket as his conscience. And Jiminy Cricket, you know, tells Pinocchio whether, you know, he's about to make a bad choice or not. Okay, that's his conscience, okay? And the other one, so that was Hiri. And then Otapa is, it's a sense of appropriate shame towards mistakes one's made in the past, okay? So let's say a week ago I foolishly, you know, indulged in playing, I don't know, with Lego. It's just a convenient example. Yeah, there is no more Lego in my life, but let's just pretend there was, okay? You know, and so if I had Otapa, I'd be like, you know what? I played with it a week ago and it was, just as always, not the right move. And I feel kind of stupid about that. You know, I feel kind of... Now, it's not about beating oneself up, okay? That's not a good thing. But kind of like reviewing a past mistake with the intent of not repeating it. Mm-hmm. You see, that's healthy. Like to take the lesson, you know what I mean?
Because otherwise you're continuing to live in the past.
Well, yeah. I'm, but this is just a glance back,
yeah,
for the sake of retrieving the lesson.
Right.
Yeah, that's otapa. Yeah, so kind of like an appropriate amount of shame, just a brief look to the past as to what mistakes did you still find yourself making, and then you refresh your resolve. Okay, I won't do that again this time. That's otapa. Yeah, so these are two key skills by which we develop our sila, our morality. You know, like we have to bring our rational thinking on board here. To, you know, this isn't entirely just an algebra of emotion and stuff. It's there is some use of our intelligence and our, you know, rational thinking to kind of like review the lessons we ought to be learning and you know to kind of you know, what would Jiminy Cricket say if he was on our shoulder, kind of thing. You know, what kind of good advice would we want to hear from our Jiminy Cricket if we had one? That's the conscience, you know. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, that's probably enough. Yeah. Okay. I'm gonna bring it to a close, and much appreciated everybody came. Okay.
Thank you.
All right.